Blog Talk Radio.
angelhealinghouse.com. I'm a writer and an author, an international radio host, a licensed Reiki master teacher, and an angel practitioner. My inspirational book, called Angels of Faith, is about my two near-death experiences, and it contains the fact, as far as I'm concerned, that we do not die and that we are divine and eternal. Through Angel Healing House, I help people to let go of sadness, anger, bitterness, resentment, and regret that has kept them locked in the prison of the past and kept them merely reacting to life. I help them to let go of worry, stress, and control, which has kept them focused on an imagined future, on things that haven't happened and probably won't happen. And once they are no longer living in the past or in the future, they can start to live in the only moment that is available to live in, which is the nano, the now. It's only in the present moment where synchronicities, miracles, and magic can occur. Now, as an angel practitioner, I help people to rise above their lives and see it from a higher perspective, to clearly see the negative patterns and the destructive habits that have caused them to sabotage and limit their lives. I do this with the help of a very large, extraordinary group of angels who I call the Posse. They have a very funny sense of humor and are extremely loving and compassionate. They give very down-to-earth, practical advice that people can very easily translate to create bliss and joy, balance and peace in their lives. So, like the Posse of Angels, I'm very excited to take some of your phone calls for free angel advice. So if you have some of that free, do call the show now on 646-716-6794. Again, that number to call in for that free angel guidance is 646-716-6794. But before we take some of those calls for angel advice, I'd like to say again, welcome to everyone to Angel Healing House Radio. And either you're listening live to the show today, or there are those that are listening to one of my archive shows on the Blog Talk Radio site, or perhaps you're listening on iTunes, where the shows can be all downloaded for free. I see that we have several callers waiting on the switchboard for that free angel advice. My regular listeners know that I like to spend around 20 or 25 minutes sharing information on our topic before I take some of those phone calls. And today's topic is near-death experiences. There is no death. Now, to start off with listeners, I'd like to speak about how this topic came about and how we are divinely and lovingly provided for and looked after. That is, if we just allow the grace of God and the angels to enter our lives. My husband and I recently returned from our heavenly trip to Maui. And while I was there, I knew in the back of my mind that the Posse of Angels and I would need to write a show, a radio show for today. And every time I tuned in to the Posse of Angels, they said, "Don't worry, go, enjoy your trip. We will let you know what to write." Knowing that they always provide for me, I felt free to not stress and enjoy all the magnificent sights that this beautiful island has to offer. It was on day number 5 of our holiday that we decided to take the long 3-hour journey to the eastern side of the island to the lush rainforest of Hana. On this remote side of the island, there was little to no internet or radio connection. Now, unbeknownst to us, as we were listening to the radio, as we climbed high into the mountains, the radio went silent. And unbeknownst to us, there was an emergency weather advisory of high gale force winds and torrential rains coming our way. As we climbed higher and the storm descended upon us, we'd forgotten that the radio was still on because it was out of range as it was silent. Suddenly, out of the blue and with crystal clear clarity, a talk radio announcer's voice comes through and says, "Today's guest is Dr. Parnia, that will be speaking about his patients who've experienced near-death experiences, or as he calls them, after-death experiences, with storm swirling all around us in the high mountains of the lush rainforest. This 20-minute show was uninterrupted and static-free. It was like God and the angels parted the storm time frame so that I would be able to be presented with what my show was about today." As soon as this talk show was over, the radio became muffled. It was full of static, and it fell silent again. When I asked the Posse of Angels why they had chosen this particular subject, near-death experiences, death, they said that they did not choose it, that I did. Well, listeners, perplexed, I asked them to explain. They said, matter-of-factly, that once listeners truly understood the last week's topic, which was entitled, "Surprise, You Are the Metaphysical Teacher," then they would have clearly connected with their divine eternal nature. And doing so, the natural flow-on effect from that realization is that we do not die. Actually, the Posse of Angels are saying now that you cannot die. Okay, they're chiming in further and saying that one can only experience death if one stops themselves from fully realizing how magnificent, how powerful, and limitless they truly are, and if they silence their magnificence in any way. I know without a shadow of a doubt that there is no death, as I had the good fortune to die twice in my life. My first experience was when I was a little girl of 5 years old, and I was playing in my kindergarten playground. The bell rang to alert the class that the recess was over and for us to line up near the flagpole. Running to get into line, I skidded across loose gravel. I lost my footing, and I went headfirst into the sharp concrete corner base of the flagpole. Immediately, I heard a strange whirring sound, and then I rose above my body and looked down on it from above, and I felt as if I was being sucked through a dark tunnel. It was in this darkness that there suddenly appeared a bright light off in the distance. As I emerged into this white light, I was absolutely thrilled to see my grandmother Clara. And even though I never met my grandmother, as she died when my own mother was 2.5 years of age, I instantly recognized her, and I felt safe and loved and protected. Now, the two of us then knelt down and peered over what appeared to be the edge of a cloud. Looking down, I saw lots of people surrounding a little girl who was crumpled by a flagpole on the ground, with blood streaming from her head. I thought how kind everyone was to that poor little girl, and I snuggled in quite smugly to my grandmother. While looking at me with great love, my grandmother Clara spoke in a sweet but firm voice. She said, "You know, Claire, it's not your time to come to us yet. You have to go back." On hearing those words, I felt a sinking pain in my heart and a pain in my stomach, knowing that I would not be allowed to remain. My mother leaned over, and she kissed me on the head. And in that second, I immediately woke up in the doctor's office as the last stitches were being sewn into my head. When I excitedly told my parents about my experience in seeing my grandmother, well, they dismissed it as just getting a bump to the head and my overactive imagination. But there was one thing that they could not dismiss, listeners. Upon my return from heaven, I displayed an unusual ability and talent for playing the piano, never having been able to play the piano before. My experience was similar to the research findings carried out by one of the world's leading researchers of near-death phenomenon, and her name is Dr. P.M.H. Atwater. Not only did Dr. Atwater have 3 near-death experiences herself in 1 year, but she's conducted over 7,000 case studies on people who experienced near-death experience, and many of those case studies were children, and her findings are quite startling. Her research showed that even though the average near-death experiencer is without vital signs for between 5 minutes, with some of the people having been, sort of dead, and without oxygen, and without their heart beating, and with their brain flatlining for more than an hour or upwards, she said that many of those researched literally came back from so-called death smarter than they were before. Her studies show that after the near-death episode, 48% of the children that she researched between the ages of birth and 15 years of age tested at genius level. That's an average IQ being 150 to 160 when there were no previous signs, including genetic, parental, or academic markers, to account for their jump in genius levels. Many of those children that she researched returned from their near-death experience having a newfound musical ability where none existed before. Like I mentioned, I could now play the piano at the age of 5 after my experience. In many of her research cases, after the near-death experience, the child came back being able to speak a foreign language and having uncanny knowledge and familiarity with foreign cultures, foreign people, and countries. They knew specifics like street names, people's names, and addresses, and they were very familiar with these unknown lands to their families and their own cultures. With this marked restructuring of the brain, Dr. Atwater is adamant that her research provides concrete evidence that the mind and the brain are two separate things. Now, another interesting aspect, listeners, to note from Dr. Atwater's research on young children was their consistent explanation about their experiences with being in a tunnel, seeing a bright white light, being welcomed by God, seeing deceased relatives. And in most all of the cases, these children had not been introduced to these concepts. They had any books to give them any preconceived ideas on what to expect when death was upon them. These children were as young as 2 and 3 years of age, yet the details of their recollections were alarmingly similar. Now, my second dance with death, as I died twice, came when I was a teenager and drowned. Like other teenagers who think that they are invincible, I went swimming in very stormy conditions, and Quite frankly, I was no match for the high swell. A huge wave crested behind me, swept me up off of my feet, and crashed down upon me, crushing me into the sandy bottom of the sea. Now, losing consciousness, I then rose above my body, and I gazed down on it like a rag doll which was being tossed in the surf and the foam. And I felt once again an almighty tugging on me as I was sucked into a tunnel with a white light at the end. As I came upon that white light, I saw a tall being of light, an angel. The love that this being of light was conveying for me was absolutely overwhelming. I immediately felt that I was in my real home. Taking my hand, the angel took me on a tour of the journey that we all get to take. Firstly, I was shown our reunion or homecoming party, in which we see deceased friends and relatives that have crossed over. I was then shown the Hall of Justice, where we all go to have the review of the life that we just led. And after the screening was over, the angel then took me to another immense building called the Hall of Akashic Records, or the Hall of Wisdom, to meet with the Etheric Council, or as I lovingly call them, the Elders. This group of sage, wise beings helps us review our life's contract in our Book of Life. And even though I did not want to go back, the Etheric Council told me that my death would absolutely destroy my parents. And solely based on that, I reluctantly decided to return. I re-signed my contract, and immediately I felt myself back in the surf. I was vomiting up a great deal of seawater, but I was alive, and I remembered my extraordinary journey. Now, when I came back this time, I was close to 15 years of age, and I did not want to appear not to be normal, not to be like everyone else. And so I did the unthinkable. I turned off my spiritual gifts, and as a result of that, it led me down a very dark path in life. And I did not open up to my spiritual gifts until from the age of about 15 to the age of about 48. That's when I had my own spiritual awakening, and I embraced my divine eternal nature, and I turned it off for a very, very long time in between. And I brought a lot of pain and a lot of suffering to myself because I turned off my communication about my spiritual awareness, about my divine eternal nature, and now there's no turning off my communication, which I share my beautiful experiences and my divine eternal nature with everyone. You know, my two near-death experiences were the basis for my inspirational book, which is called Angels of Faith, which actually helps people to remember that they are divine and eternal. If you'd like to purchase my book, Angels of Faith, it can be found on my website, which is www.angelhealinghouse.com, and Angel Healing House is all one word. Now, I'd like to go on and talk a little bit about some of the stories of skeptical doctors who did not believe in the afterlife or after so-called death, and then they became believers as a result of their own near-death experiences. If you'd like to contribute to the discussion today, to the topic of near-death experiences, there is no death, or if you would like to call in for some free angel advice and guidance from myself and my angelic family, the Posse of Angels, please do call into the show. That number, for that call-in number, is 646-716-6794. Again, that call-in number is 646-716-6794. Let's go to one of our callers, 678. You're on the line with Angel Healing House. Hello, who am I speaking with? Hello? Hello? Hello, who am I speaking with?
Hi, this is Cyril.
Hello, Cyril. How are you today?
I'm good. I'm just listening today.
Oh, you're just listening today? Okay, your number just popped up on the screen. Okay, have fun listening, and God bless you, and lots of love. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay, now, I shared, before I spoke to Cyril, I spoke to you about my two personal stories with crossing over the veil. And I spoke about the vast research by Dr. P.M.H. Atwater about patients who've had their own near-death experiences. And even though many doctors and scientists have had patients who've experienced their own near-death experience and shared their experiences with them, many doctors have been quite skeptical as they have not believed them. Well, this was until some of these doctors actually experienced their own near-death experiences for themselves. In one case, a Dr. Mary Neal had her near-death experience when she was on a whitewater rafting trip. Her raft overturned, and as a result of this, she stopped breathing for more than 15 minutes, and she had plenty of other people with her that witnessed this. She says that she immediately felt like she was home once again, and that there were angels surrounding her, comforting her, reassuring her, and filling her with the most amazing, overwhelming love. She didn't want to return to her body, but she was told that she had to go back, and she had to go back and tell others about her experience. She was also told when she had crossed over that her son would die when he was 19. Tragically, this came to pass, and he was hit by a car and died. Now, no longer a skeptic, this doctor is now a believer, like those of us who have had our own near-death experiences, and we know it was much more real than the life that we're living now. And a lot of near-death experiencers that come back, like myself, we love the incarnation we're living now, but we have a sense that this is the illusion, and that when we cross over into our real home, that's our real reality. Now, a similar story happened to a gentleman by the name of Dr. Eben Alexander, who is a neurosurgeon and was a non-believer in life after death, until he experienced his own coma for a week as a result of a severe bacterial meningitis. As not only a doctor, but also a scientist, just like Dr. P.M.H. Atwater, Dr. Alexander's condition should have eliminated all experiences from his brain, as his meningitis was ravaging his neocortex, and that's the area of the brain which is where dreams and hallucinations happen. Yet he was fully conscious of what he experienced in heaven, and he came back with these experiences, and now as a result of his experience with his own near-death experience, he too is a believer. In the skeptics, the believer category, there are two British doctors who have presented research in the California Institute that consciousness keeps on going even when the patient is clinically dead. The research conducted on victims of heart attacks is actually the first in which science has actually proven that cognition does not stop when the brain is no longer functioning. You know, Dr. Parnia's research clearly shows that they have a group of people with no brain function who have well-structured, lucid thought processes with reasoning, and also they have memory function as well, and a memory formation at that time when their brains are shown not to be functioning at all. Now, according to Dr. Parnia, the initial study consisted of 63 heart attack patients who had been pronounced dead, And once these patients had been revived, they recalled feelings of peace and utter bliss and joy. They all had a sense that time had speeded up. They had a heightened senses. There was a lost awareness of body, seeing the bright white light, entering another world, encountering a mystical light being, their angels, seeing deceased relatives, and coming to a point of no return. And at this point of no return, let me just touch on this in a moment. You know, when I was 5 years old in my first near-death experience, I did not have the option of choosing to whether I was going to go back or not. And as my grandmother Clara said to me, you have to go back. But, you know, you have to go back to your life on Earth. And I was—I experienced a great deal of pain in my heart, and like I was kicked in the stomach. But I would have to go back, and I could not remain in heaven. But I actually did have a choice when I was 15, close to 15 years of age, when I drowned. And I remember the elders, the etheric council, the sage wise beings, asking me if I wanted to go back, and I said no. I said, I don't want to go back. And they looked and pointed in my book of lives, and they said, look here. There's you're going to get married. Isn't that lovely? You're going to get married. There's a husband here. You know, and if you don't go back, excuse me, there will be no marriage. And I said, I don't care. And then they searched around a little bit more, and they said, oh, but look. Out of this marriage, there's going to be children. There's going to be two children. And if you don't go back, they won't be born. And I said, I don't care. I want to remain in heaven. I want to remain in my real home. They went quiet. They went quiet for a while. And that's when they looked at me, and they just basically said, you are going to, this is going to devastate and destroy your parents if you don't go back. And that took all the wind out of my teenage sails. I started to think of what effect this would have on my parents if I did not return to my earthly life. And it was at that point that I reluctantly re-signed my contract for my life. And then I went back and I survived that drowning. But I can tell you quite frankly that I did not want to come back, and so many near-death experiences have the same feeling. It's not like they hate their life, their incarnation, maybe some of them do, but they're living, you know, sort of very strained lives. It's not all blissful, but once you get that feeling of going back to our real home, it really is indescribable. Words, a lot of times near-death experiences like myself have a very difficult time explaining what that feels like to be in the arms of the all that is, God, Source, Universal Being, feeling that sense of wholeness, pureness, completeness, you know, just that sense that all you need to do is just to be, all ego erased, and you feel pure and loved, whole, and just divine who you truly are. Now back to the research about our doctors who were skeptics and then into believers. A little bit more about Dr. Sam Parnia's research. Some skeptics believe that the near-death experience is caused by low oxygen levels. But Dr. Parnia said none of his patients had low oxygen levels at all. Also, Dr. Parnia stated that people who suffer oxygen deprivation usually have no memories at all of their experience. But his research demonstrated that patients can have an insult to the brain, but they go on to have perfect memory. Based on their first and based on his first experimental study, Dr. Parnia and his colleagues have learned of more than 3,500 cases where people have lucid memories of times when they were clinically dead. Many times, he said, patients hesitated to report their experiences, being apprehensive that others would question their sanity. And that brings me to another point on near-death experiences. You know, most people, like myself, hesitate to tell people what it's like, what it's actually like. I mean, to tell somebody that you saw your deceased relatives. I remember when I went on my my heavenly journey with the angels when I drowned when I was close to 15 years of age. I found myself in this beautiful garden, and it was full of pink balloons, and it was there was a birthday cake there or a welcome home sign. And then my relatives, my grandmother and my grandfather, this was my grandmother and my grandfather on my father's side, my paternal grandparents, they walked towards me. And while they appeared to be, you know, the age that I knew them, because they both died when I was 8 years old, they were healthy. They were no longer infirm. They didn't act like old people. And they didn't seem to be dead at all. And we hugged each other and we embraced each other. It was a beautiful reunion. I then saw different relatives which had crossed over. I saw not only the relatives, but I saw people from previous incarnations that I had had. And I knew them. I knew them instantly at close to 15 years of age and growing up on a farm. There were a lot of pets and a lot of farm animals that I became very close with that crossed over as well. And they appeared to be very much alive, and they didn't seem to be dead at all. So, you know, that was my experience that I had. And for me to come back and to, you know, tell people, especially at the age of 15, when all you want to do is fit in, all you want to do is be like everybody else. And believe me, this was, I was born in 1955. So you know, this would have been, you know, close to, you know, around in the end of the 60s. You know, people weren't as open today spiritually to these kind of things. It was more back closet. You know, people were, you know, sequestered away in small underground or closeted groups talking about all of this and speaking about this. There weren't the amount of books out there and the internet. So I did what any good teenager would do. I sequestered it away inside of me, and I closed that part of myself off. And I can really see how so many of those people who have experienced near-death experience, they just don't share it with others, because others, when you try to experience what has happened to you, yes, there are certain similarities, like, you know, you in a great many cases, as with these doctors' research findings, you know, you experience being pulled into a tunnel. You experience the white light. You experience walking out and being in the arms of the all that is, or experience a Jesus, a God, or a Buddha, or someone that you connect with on a higher level spiritually. Angels meet you. And, you know, you can tell everybody, you know, about those things, but the feeling, the true feeling of wholeness, of completeness, and of divine love that you feel, those things are truly not translatable in any kind of words, as those feelings are so profound and so deep in your heart. And a lot of near-death experiences, when they talk about it, their experiences, it brings tears to their eyes, because that where they remember that feeling in their heart about being so loved. Just a note on near-death experiences, and or not really on near-death experiences, on people who have experienced their own crossing over to the veil. I remember an article that came out speaking about Steve Jobs when he was on his deathbed and his family was around him. I think his sister was around him and other family members. Right before he crossed over, his final three words, he looked off into the distance. He didn't look at his family, but he looked off into the distance, and his three last words were, "Wow, wow, wow." And I'm just getting goosebumps now as I say that. The Posse of Angels have told me when I read that, that he got a glimpse into where he was going, and it heightens your senses. It opens you up to experience your true, authentic, divine nature again, and there truly is nothing like it. So I'll go back to some of the research of Dr. Parnia, Dr. Sam Parnia, and he's talking about after-death experiences. He doesn't like to call them near-death experiences, but he calls them after-death experiences. Now, in one amazing case, the child had a seizure where his heart stopped. He was revived, and later on, he drew a picture of himself looking down on his own body. The parents then sent the child's picture to Dr. Parnia. It was drawn like there was a balloon stuck to him. When they asked, the parents asked the child what the balloon was, he said, "When you die, you see a bright white light. You are cool." This child wasn't even 3 years of age when he translated his experience and he drew what he had seen. Now, Dr. Parnia's conclusion to all of this is that human consciousness may work independently of the brain, using the gray matter as a mechanism to manifest the thought, just as a television set translates waves in the air into picture and sound. Just because the brain is damaged and does not necessarily mean that the mind is affected. You know, before conducting this study, Dr. Parnia himself was a skeptic, yet as a result of his research, he too is an expert in continuing after our physical life. And, you know, quite frankly, listeners, having had two near-death experiences myself, you know, I can tell you that it has become more talked about in this year of 2013, and we've come a long way as far as raising our consciousness and opening ourselves up to see ourselves as multidimensional beings rather than just physical incarnation. Most of the time, those who have experienced near-death experiences, again, don't talk about it because we are basically in the minority of those on the planet who have had this experience. And one thing that Dr. Parnia says is that this has been experienced by so many more people in the last 20 to 30 years is because modern science and technology has allowed people to be resuscitated and brought back to life on a much grander scale than they ever were before. And you know, he was speaking about people who were resuscitated after hours of being dead. Yet the different technologies and the modern medicine was able to bring them back to life, and then they were able to tell quite lucidly and with great clarity and great description about what they experienced when they were dead. I mean, these people had no oxygen. Their brain had flatlined and their heart had stopped for a very long period of time. Yet they came back and they told about their experiences. Now, I often equate it, you know, with having a near-death experience and telling others about it. And others look at you like, you know, oh, yeah, you're crazy. It's because the oxygen to the brain is cut off And the bright white light is just the brain synapsing, and you know, a lot of science has been able to explain what has happened, but science really can't explain children coming back like myself and being able to play the piano, you know, speaking foreign languages, knowing different cultures, you know, and having you know, sort of IQ levels, the genius level where none was measured before their near-death experience. Children as young as 3 years old talking about a cord being connected to your body and going through a tunnel and seeing deceased relatives and things like that. I like to tell the story, you know, to people about equating it to the near-death experience and people not having that experience. You know, imagine if we had a time machine and we were able to punch in whatever date we needed to travel back. And let's say we punched in the year 1500 or 1400 and we traveled back in time, and suddenly our time machine, there we were in the 1400s, let's say, and we were in the middle of a village, a serfdom on a baron's property. And there we appeared, we step out of our time machine, and the townsfolk are curiously looking at us, and we get out and we have our iPod attached to our ears, and we just can't believe what we just accomplished. And we're texting our friends and emailing people on our phone and telling them about our experiences. And the townsfolk look at us again, and they see earrings, and they see strange dress and mode of the way we wear our hair, perhaps the makeup we have on, and you know, the perfume that's coming off of us. Anyway, they're very curious, and they run, and they pick up kindling, and they pick up wood, and they take us, and they strap us, and they tie us up, and they use the kindling to burn us at the stake, because we're a demon, we're a witch. And in their experience, this cannot happen. This cannot happen at all, because they have the limited experience to have had this experience of all of these things, which we take for granted in our modern-day world. You know, now we see these things as ordinary and everyday, and we don't get as excited, and, you know, we say, these things and so much more are possible because we've been opened up, our consciousness, to a lot of us to be more enlightened, more aware, and more open and receptive of these things happening. As I said before, you know, Dr. Parnia was a skeptic before, but now he really does believe in consciousness continuing after just our physical life. Now, more and more doctors are and scientists like Dr. Sam Parnia, Dr. Mary Neal, Dr. Eben Alexander, and Dr. Atwater, they're adamant that their personal experiences and research provide concrete evidence that the mind and the brain are two separate things. The term, actually, near-death experience, only came into existence by the studies of a doctor by the name of Dr. Raymond Moody, and he wrote a book, Life After Life. And in that book, he was the first one to pen the experience, near-death experience, because of his experiences with his patients coming back after they had seemingly died and then had all of these remembrances. Now, going back to Dr. PMH Atwater, she actually is quoted by saying, "With more and more medical people willing to consider the reality of the near-death phenomenon, it's now time that we mature. We really do mature as a society, and we admit and recognize that we have all the proof that we need to establish that human beings are more than just their physical body and senses. There are other realities that we can reach." Now, Having personally experienced crossing over from the physical dimension to the non-physical dimension, I like the saying that goes, to see death as the end of life is like seeing the horizon as if it was the end of the ocean. Now, again, this near-death phenomenon, and there seems to be, in the last really 2 to 5 years, a lot of doctors and scientists, again, who were skeptics, and now, because of their own near-death experience, they now believe. But this research has really been going on since the 60s, since the 70s, and some were even doing this beforehand, but it wasn't as widely printed. One of these doctors was Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. She was a Swiss-born psychiatrist, and she was an author. She gained international recognition and fame from her book on death and dying. She quotes in the book and says, "Death is simply a shedding of the physical body, like the butterfly shedding its own cocoon. It's a transition to a higher state of consciousness where you continue to perceive, to understand, to laugh, and to be able to grow." Now, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, well, she made her own crossing over in 2004 at the age of 78, and she actually prepared her own children for her leaving the earth plane, and she said to her children, "I've told my children that when I die, to release balloons in the sky to celebrate that I graduated. For me, death is a graduation." Then I also like Dr. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross because she was very natural about her work with patients with near-death experience. And she just took it as a matter of course that we are multidimensional beings and have consciousness after our physical existence. Let's go to the phone lines to 503. You're on the line with Angel Healing House. Hello, who am I speaking with?
Hi, good morning.
Hello, who am I speaking with?
This is Michelle.
Hi, Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. What's your question today?
Well, I kind of wanted to talk to you about a mutual friend of ours. I'm having some issues because of basically her not being living up to her potential, and it's kind of one of those things that she's like you and has gone through that experience. I have not, but being empathic, I'm way more in tune to her than most people, and it's literally like just taking a huge step backwards right now, and I just don't, I mean, I've tried to talk to her about it, and I just don't even know how I can help or how I can, I mean, I want her to go on her own path, and I know it's her own path, and it's not my job, but it's kind of getting to the point where it's really detrimental to our relationship for us to even continue because of the animosity that has become very present in our relationship, and it's at no fault of my own.
Well, if you, as Michelle, I would really guide you to listen to my last two shows and to my last two blogs in particular. January and February of this year were absolutely tantamount for us to review relationships and see if there was any inauthenticity, any dishonor, any disrespect, or anything at all in the relationship which wasn't sitting well with us. If it wasn't in any way, then it was like a coat which has become too small for us, and you must part ways. Now, if that is to happen, you must forgive the other person and forgive yourself for any of your part in this relationship, because you drew this person to yourself, and I know who this person is. The Posse of Angels know who this person is, and we know why you came together. You came together to give each other strength, to give each other support, and now because of something or the things that this person is doing, you know, where before you played the role of saving that person, of enabling
mm-hmm.
that person, of helping that person. You
mm-hmm.
that's not our job anymore.
Exactly. And
it
I think that's one of the things that I've just jumped forward without even expecting to, with a lot of different things in my life. And I'm a very independent person. I always have been, and
mm-hmm.
she's incredibly a dependent person. So naturally, yes, she became dependent on me, but as I pull away and I'm not her mother and I'm not going to be her mother, and it's almost like I said, there's this animosity because she wants me to, but I'm like, no, you know, that's that's your
okay.
job. You need to learn how to stand on your own two feet.
Okay, well, but you have to understand, Michelle, that we can't control anybody else. And
uh-huh.
it's not, and for her to learn her lessons and to evolve into the conscious, awakened, enlightened, settled peace, you know, within herself, to be loving and independent on her own, that's what you said is true. That is her own journey. And the way that you can best help her is by helping yourself and parting the ways by having, and the Posse of Angels is saying, a natural separation. And the natural separation needs to come by you not living together. That needs
okay.
to happen. That needs to happen.
How?
Then, both of you then can go and live your separate lives. And you'll be surprised that, you know, once that physical distance is there, you might then still come back together in some karmic way. But the distance needs to be done, and you need to put this relationship to bed, through forgiveness.
I'm wondering if, because right now we are looking for a place, because we are living together, but we're living together in very, very small quarters, and it's not working, and it hadn't worked. And it was kind of always going to be a temporary thing that we were living in this place, but it's turned into quite a few months down the road. So right now we are looking for a place together, but a two-bedroom, like a larger apartment, so that we can have our own space. By not living together, do you mean completely just not living together, or do you mean just we need our own space?
Okay, the Posse of Angels are checking into that, and they are saying that it's time to move on to, and this is a decision that's not going to be easy for both of you, because
mm-hmm.
you found each other like two little lights, two little
mm-hmm.
beacons of light, and you had your own issues that were weighing heavily on you, and you were like two little soul sisters that grabbed onto each other at one stage and supported each other through enormous things. But
mm-hmm.
now it seems, let me just ask them again, would it be in their best interest, Posse, if they separated at this stage in order for the new to come in? They're saying yes.
Saying yes to what?
Yeah, they're saying yes to parting of the ways, and to each have your own place, maybe, you know, sort of by... renting and sharing a place with other people, but it's causing so much friction within both of you, because both
mm-hmm.
of you have outgrown the relationship that you have established.
With that, I don't know if I would say worry or how would I put it, because of the previous living arrangement she was in, I know that if for some reason we did part ways at this stage in her life, she would go back to where she was living before, which that's
but
her
that's
choice.
Not yours.
But I also feel like there was, right now there's resentment, but it's not of no fault of my own. I mean, if you don't try to change anything in your life, and, you know, if you don't do anything. Yeah, I know.
And
I know.
Why are you feeling resentment? People only feel resentment to to somebody if they feel like they can't control something.
I'm not being resentful whatsoever. I'm feeling it from her.
Okay.
I'm feeling because she's not taking any of the responsibility or owning up to the fact that she made this decision as well. She's pretty much blaming it all on me.
Well, that has nothing to do with you. Nothing to do with you. You acknowledge one of the great exercises to help you, and I know you know this exercise, is to call in her higher self, your higher self, acknowledge her exactly as she is, to thank her for her involvement in your life and giving up part of her incarnation, to bless her for exactly where she is, and to release her. And the only way that you can move forward in your life is to be so active and to take your emphasis off anything where she is. I just drew three cards for a bit of an insight. The Two of Swords is you have to make a decision. And there's no right or wrong, but if you do want to move forward, you have to do something different to what has been done all along. The next card is the Ace of Pentacles. This is not only for financial security, but I know you're very intuitive in tarot. This will make you feel so abundant and open you up to feel so rich and prosperous within yourself. It'll open up new doors for you. And hold on to your keister. The third card is the Ten of Pentacles.
Oh, wow.
So it really depends on whether you want to take that. I mean, you know in your heart that this relationship has come to a stasis. You know it. You know, it serves a purpose, but it's over. I've got about 3 minutes left, so I can be on the line with you for about another minute, Michelle. But truly, it's time that you said, bless this person for exactly where she is, and know, too, that she has to do something different. And by you enabling, I know how supportive, how sort of enabling you are, and you've been there for her to lean on. Maybe by you getting your own place, it will cause her to take that much-needed step forward for her to be grounded and to really step forward and take responsibility and accountability for her life.
I kind of already knew a lot of this stuff because I've just been feeling this, and I had a conversation with her yesterday about it, and it was just complete denial, complete and utter denial, and I was just, I was kind of taken aback because realistically, she knows that I already know. She knows that I know. Regardless, she doesn't have to tell me. She already knows that I know, but she's been denying it. She's been denying herself, and thus her gifts are starting to diminish.
The posse of angels are chiming in here and saying, and this is the last thing before we have to end the call because I really do have to go. They're saying, do your best and leave the rest and allow the other person to truly walk their journey. And if you do that, there is no sadness, anger, bitterness, resentment, or regret.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michelle. Take care of yourself. Lots of love.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye. On this last note, listeners, about near-death experiences, I'd like to quote the great Indian teacher and saint who wrote Autobiography of a Yogi, and he was largely responsible for bringing yoga to the Western world. His name is Paramahansa Yogananda, and he said, "Death is only an experience through which you are meant to learn a great lesson, that you cannot die." That just about wraps up the show for today. Thank you to the caller I had and listeners for tuning in to the program. Thank you to those who are listening to this archive show on either the Blog Talk Radio site or on iTunes for free. If you'd like to receive my uplifting and enlightening Angel Healing House newsletter, it's filled with channeled messages from my angelic family, the Posse of Angels, please send me your email and request to candy@angelhealinghouse.com. And if you'd like to receive my beautiful book, Angels of Faith, that can be found on my website, www.angelhealinghouse.com. Until next time, listeners, allow your radiant light to shine and go out and fashion an absolutely beautiful life for yourself. Love. and angel blessings. Bye-bye.